Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Coach Mack is presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Visit FBHP.com for more information. I've got the dental vision plan through Farm Bureau Health Plans. Coach Mack's on the silver plan as well. You can hear him and Coach Matthews discuss that from time to time.
That's, I mean, those people at Farm Bureau.
Yep, they're great.
They are tremendous. I mean, they are really good. I mean, besides having great products, they're just really good people.
Mack, so are you. How are you?
I'm good. How are we doing, guys?
Good, good.
All right, what we got?
We're going to jump right into it.
Let's go.
The decision behind the quarterback change. I know you've been asked about it all week, but it's not an easy one to make. How long do you ponder that as a head coach?
Well, I mean, he made the decision during the ball game, which, you know, I felt like, I mean, it's just my opinion. I felt like it was the right decision during the ball game.
Yeah, we all did.
Yeah, because there were clearly struggles going on. And then, you know, once you make that decision with a guy that's been your starter that long, then clearly you got to sit down and have conversations with all relevant parties that are going to be involved. And that takes some time to do that. You do not make a decision like that in a vacuum. You don't make a decision like that by yourself. And you don't make a decision like that without input from several people. And you need several people to talk, because you need people to be devil's advocate. You need to, you know, you need to circle it up. And they did that. And so I'm sure that they've got, you know, I know they got John Robinson involved in it. They got Amy Adams Strunk involved in it. They had the offensive coordinator involved in it. And, you know, the quarterback coach. I mean, you do, though. You have to get it's not so much a consensus, but you have to talk it out, and you have to run it by, because those are when you make a decision like that, you know, with a quarterback that has been your starting quarterback for 4 years plus, you know, that you drafted, you know, that the organization drafted number two overall, and that's in a contract year. You don't just make that thing knee jerk. That's not a knee jerk decision at all.
Go ahead, Paul. Sorry.
What do you think he could provide that's been lacking in an offense with, and I know Vrabel said spark. Expand on spark.
Well, I mean, you look at it, let's just look at what Tannehill's history is and what his numbers say. I mean, it's basically a lot, you know, some of the same. Now, what he can provide, you know, Marcus, to me, was struggling to try to overcome himself, you know, as things started to not work. All right, now Tannehill has not had that. He hasn't had that pressure on him. You know, he really hasn't. When you watch Tannehill's body of work of what he's done, I mean, I've gone against Tannehill a couple of times. Always thought, you know, before the ACL, that he was really a mobile quarterback that could move, could locate downfield on the move, you know, fairly well, fairly decently. You know, has had some issues with the rush in the past. You know, not lately as far as to when I've, you know, gone against him or game planned against him. He can make all of the throws, and he really does a nice job of he sets up, eyes downfield, and he does a good job I think he can make all of the checks, because, you know, he did that with the various coordinators he had there at Miami. So, I mean, it's the thing you get about it from him is you get a fresh perspective from the quarterback, and you know, and Marcus was struggling, and so that, I think, is the biggest thing you get.
Well, Gus Bradley's going to make him beat his defense.
Yeah, he is,
make Tannehill throw the football, because they're going to load the box. Everybody else has been doing that.
They'll load the box, and that's what people have been doing against this. You know, I listened coming into your statistic about, you know, contact yards, you know, for Derrick Henry, and that comes from loaded boxes. I mean, that's exactly what it comes from. Now, Gus Bradley, Hutt, his defense, and of course, you know, when they were rolling hot there at Seattle, he likes to do a lot of things with a four-man front, all right? But, and he'll play that three-read coverage back there, and he'll play quarters coverage, but if he wants to stop the run, all right, you know, quarters, if you're playing quarters coverage or you're playing three deep coverage, it turns into an eight-man front real quick depending on where you deploy your safeties. And that's what he will do. He will start out with that to be able to say, look, you know, I'm going to see if Ryan Tannehill and this offense can pick the ball up and throw it on me. And so he's gonna load the box, and you can load the box several different ways out of what he does. He starts with the four-man front. He can either drop the strong safety or the free safety down to either side. He can roll them down, you know, prior to the snap, you know, either what, you know, out of that quarters look. Because when you play your safeties in quarters, it's easy to load one of them and drop them down, you know, prior to snap. Or they can even come down during the snap, so you give the look of a seven-man box and it turns into an eight-man box. You know, I've gone against Gus Bradley's defense before.
Is there a rhyme or reason to which safety you bring down, given the down and distance or strong side?
A lot of times it's this. That's a relevant question. If you're in 12 personnel, most people have a stud tight end that you call it, and most people have an open side tight end. You normally bring your run strength down to the stud side tight end. If you have two open sides, and you'll bring it down if it in a one back set to the tilt of the back. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do, you know, to look at it. But he's got two guys that are interchangeable.
There were at least a couple snaps in Denver where my colleague next to me and I noticed that the two safeties were within 6 yards of the line of scrimmage.
You and Teron Davenport.
Yeah, I don't remember what the Titans did against that, but I know they didn't do something that backed Denver off in a dramatic way. And I took that as Marcus's inaccuracy was just not putting them in a spot where they could do the obvious thing that's being begged, that they're daring you to do.
Yeah, if people are loading the box on you, and if you, you know, a 6 yard depth, okay, if you're working at 6 yard depth, if you're working two safeties at 6 yards, prior to snap, you can roll one of them back to a post safety still. You know, that's fairly easy. But if they are indeed that close and they're triggering those safeties at 6 yards, you know, and whichever way the run starts, that one triggers down and the other one is rolling back, you're still facing the eight-man front. And you're the thing to back it off, you got to throw it. And most of the times you have to throw it outside. Because whether you're in man or you're in zone, if you've got an eight-man box, that corner's man-to-man. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's
exactly
man or
what you want.
Yeah,
right?
He's man to man. Correct. And look, you don't have to go. And people miss. I think some people have a misconception. I'm not saying all, but some people have a misconception when they say when you load the box, well, you got to go downtown. You got to load it. You got to throw it over their heads. No, you don't. What you got to do is you got to beat the corners on individual cuts and make it second and five.
And there were plays that were there.
Oh yeah,
last
well, you,
week.
The one he threw in the ground was. I mean, you saw those, and so. That's basically what you do, and then when you start doing that, then you make a defensive coordinator, especially on a conflict down, decide now: am I going to roll corners? Am I going to play? You know, am I going to give somebody some help, or are they continuous to beat me on the outside, not only inside, but I mean outside with outbreaking routes or even with inbreaking routes? If you're getting 4 or 5 yards on first down, you still got a manageable second down. Go ahead, Hutt.
Mac, you and I were talking recently, and we were both saying, you know, Tannehill can play pretty free. He's not looking over his shoulder. They don't want to have a musical chairs at that position. So unless he has some Nathan Peterman type performance in the first half, he can go out there and just, I won't say wing it, but sling it around.
Well,
and,
I mean,
not have to worry about
it. I mean, he's got to play within himself. I mean, he can't go just free Willy out there and just, you know, starts. But
he
yes,
doesn't have to earn a contract in week 7.
He does not. And that's a great point. And the other thing is you're not bringing a guy in that he's going to be all wide-eyed because he's starting in the National Football League. He's got 88 starts in the National Football League. And he came here knowing that he might get an opportunity to do this. And so he's got his opportunity. So to that point, I agree with you.
Phillip Rivers, going back in my notes this time last year, we were discussing the start to his season, which was, you were calling it the best start for his career.
It really was.
For the first month and a half of any season he had played. That's not the case this year.
No.
And he's turning the ball over at an unusual rate for him. What's going on there?
Well, I think he's pressing because they're not winning. And plus, the other thing is, Jonathan, if you'll remember, last year I went back and looked over my notes, and I thought, you know, watching the tape last year, he was doing a great job of all the blend and calling things, you know, Wisenhunt's giving him a lot of leeway at that line of scrimmage as far as getting them in the right play, both run and pass, depending on what he sees and where he wants to move people. But they had their run game going last year. I mean, they had their run game going, and he was hitting on all cylinders. He really was, and he can be as in sync and as rhythmic as any quarterback that you play. I mean, we've all played against him, have teams have played against him. See, it's not going like that. They're not running the ball. They're having issues with their offensive line. They've already changed some positions within their offensive line during this first 6 weeks of the season. So they're not in rhythm offensively. And so consequently, my thought is some of those interceptions and some of those turnovers are coming from he's pressing a little bit, trying to make something happen. I mean, because that is his nature. I mean, he's a highly competitive guy. I mean, I've got much respect for him as a quarterback in this league just because of the body of work and then because of the type of competitor he is. And so that is, you know, to me is a little bit of what I think is going on.
Where do you rank him league-wise as an anticipatory thrower?
Oh, clear at the top. Clear at the top. I mean, he is one of those guys. If you want to put on a film and you want to watch the end zone copy when you're trying to watch spacing and things, you can sometimes see him throw the football, and the wide receiver won't be in frame yet, you know, because he reads. What is he? 15, 16 years? I mean, he reads
2004 draft.
Okay, well, all right. Well, he reads coverages. He knows he's anticipatory. Is a big word. It's a good word for him because I'd put him as one of the best.
So it's not like, and I'll use Winston as an example of a guy who I expect to throw an interception every week. It's not like you can count on Rivers to give that to you.
And that's the other thing. I mean, they're 2-4 also, and some of these turnovers have led to that. And again, as I said, he may have been pressing in some of those games, but you can't go in. Some of the times, I mean, when you're, you know, as a former defensive coordinator and defensive coach in this league, you're watching tape and you're going, hey, this guy's going to give it to us. You know, this guy's going to get it to us. If we do this, this, and this, and show him this, and he'll panic and give it to us, you don't get that. You know that's not happening with Rivers. He's doing it because he's pressing, but you don't go into it saying, we can count on Phillip Rivers throwing us three of them.
And that's a contrast with what the Titans have gotten from their quarterback. Marcus hasn't thrown with anticipation very often, and hopefully Tannehill can do it a bit more.
Well, I mean, and you know, in the National Football League, I mean, it. You guys have watched it. I've been in it over half my adult life. You know, quarterbacks in this league, you know, the first thing you look for is accuracy. The next thing you look for is being able to throw receivers open, okay? And the next thing you look for is pocket presence and pocket manipulation, because the whole key to playing defense in the National Football League is to try to fluster the quarterback in pocket before throws, after throws. They've taken it away. Some of it used to be intimidate the quarterback by physically beating him down even after the throw. They've taken that away, but you still have to affect the quarterback as a defense in the National Football League.
Mac, Keenan Allen is you call him one of the best tempo receivers in the league. What do you mean by that?
I really like that guy. Here's what he is. He's not a burner. Now, he's got speed. I mean, you know, anybody that plays receiver in the National Football League has got speed, all right? I mean, he's just not afterburner speed. But the pace that he runs, and, you know, there's a lot of nuances to being a really good receiver, you know, and I liken it. I go back to the days of and I'm not putting him in this category, but like Jerry Rice wasn't just a burner, but the tempo and the pace that he ran routes and the nuances, the way he set up routes, the way he went into breaks, the way he came, and I'm talking about Keenan Allen now, the way he goes into breaks, the way he comes out of breaks, as clean as he is, the clean target that he gives his quarterback. He's got tremendous hands. He understands zone, how to manipulate zone coverage. He understands how to work away and sometimes into and fake away from leverage. I love this receiver. To me, he is really a very, very good technical receiver. I mean, I like him a lot.
Who on the Titans is most like that, or could be most like that?
Well, it's. I mean, he's. All right. If you
go ahead, say nobody. That's all
no,
right.
No. Let's the one that we have that would be kind of like that can manipulate coverage is Humphreys. You know, Humphreys manipulates coverage, but Keenan Allen's different. He's a longer, you know, he's a little longer guy. But Humphreys can manipulate coverage. Humphreys a good coverage manipulator. I mean, he's – but anyway, I like Keenan Allen a lot.
They don't have Tyrell Williams in that offense this year. He's now in Oakland.
Right.
Mike Williams is there, but they do have Hunter Henry back. And he was out last year and out for the first month this year.
He's just come back, and he makes a big difference. That's a nice issue looking downfield, you know, for Rivers to look at. He's a mismatch. Hunter Henry is a mismatch against all defenses, and you have to decide as a defensive coordinator and a defensive game planner as to far as down and distance and formation and personnel as to how you're going to handle him. And if you don't feel like you have a single matchup with him, then you've got to decide whether you're going to go underneath and over the top on him, whether you're going to vice him. You know, you've got to decide some things you're going to do to him because he is a really, really big mismatch, and even more so down in the red zone. Even though you have the back line as the 12th defender, his reach, his height, and plus he's a big receiver that's got good spatial awareness, which is important. I mean, he's not just a guy that's going to go down and push off of you and turn around. He can maneuver in space. He will show up. He showed up last week. He'll show up again.
So I was just going through the schedule in my head. They haven't faced a tight end like that yet, right? I mean, they have Njoku in Cleveland.
And Njoku is a mismatch too, but he's not as polished as what Henry is.
Jack Doyle didn't have the effect on the Colts
game. Doyle's not really a factor for the Colts this year with Brissett.
Definitely not in Jacksonville where they don't have any depth at that position. Atlanta, no. Although they do have Hooper, but
Hooper's having a nice year, even though they're having a down year. But Hooper is different too because Hooper is a little bigger and a little thicker. Hunter Henry has a little more space stuff to him.
What about Noah Fant? Is it similar to how you would try to cover him?
I would say similar to he's a little longer than Fant. He's a little more experienced than Fant, but the ability to stretch. And also just to mismatch and out muscle and out maneuver, you know, as far as what I say with those guys, combat catcher, yes.
The last time the Titans played with a lead was in Atlanta in that first half.
And they won the game.
So offensively, just find some points. I mean, I know that sounds so simple, but find some points and allow your defense to play with a lead and allow your offense to run its offense. By leading on the scoreboard.
Well, and I mean, you
not having to throw it 30
as you
times
said
a
it. As you said it, it sounds simple, but but it's true, and it's true because the Titans defense, Dean Pease, and these defensive players and these defense, they're doing a really good job. They really are, and their game planning and their game execution week to week to week. I know I've said this before. It doesn't really matter what I've done in my career. But in my career, I have played on teams as to where the defense it was a little more defensive carry. Than it was for the offense, and I just know that any type of lead helps that type of defense because they can feed off of your offensive success. This defense can, and I've been on defenses that can do this, and this one has been producing. This defense has been producing, and you know knock on everything they've stayed relatively healthy, and so you give them just a little bit of lead because it's hard in the National Football League to play defense with your heels over the edge of the cliff. Constantly, and it really is, and so just a little bit of a lead, we'll really see an uptick in this defense.
Both teams, the Titans and the Chargers, have put themselves in huge holes within their own divisions. They're both 2-4, but the losses that they have, they'll be kicking themselves whenever December rolls around because they'll be scratching and trying to hang on to a wild card berth based on the way they've started the season. They're mirror images of each other in some ways.
Well, they really are. I mean, and you pointed out that both teams came into this season with teams that they felt like had a chance to start off quicker than both of them have started off as far as in the win column. And then they're both still the way the AFC is filtering out. I mean, if you can get on a run and start stacking wins, I mean, you've got a chance to get into at least the tournament consideration, and that's where both of these teams are. And plus, you know, both of these teams have had some offensive line issues. You know, as you say, both of these teams have had trouble establishing a run game. Both teams' defenses have played, fairly consistent. And so, I mean, there's some similarities.
The Chargers defense is not the Titans defense.
No.
But they're okay. They're a pretty good defense right now, and when you just look across the league.
Yeah, they are, and they're playing with, I don't mean to interrupt you, but, I mean, people recognize names, I mean, you know, if you don't really know teams, and people people know who Joey Bosa is, you know, because Joey Bosa is a, you know, and really, if you look at it right now, I mean, you know, Joey Bosa is a really good player. You know, Harold Landry's got more sacks than Joey Bosa does. Harold Landry's having a pretty good year, you know, a little, for us. But everybody knows Joey Bosa, and everybody knows Thomas Davis Sr., used to be at Carolina, you know, that they brought in there. But they've got some young players that that I kind of like. And you and I were texting back and forth last week, just kind of looking. They got a kid they use a lot named Uchenna Nwosu, number 42. That they used to rush, you'll stand him up some. I mean, I kind of like the way he plays. I mean,
and they're really bringing him along because early in the season, Mac, it was, 15 to 20 snaps per game, and yes, now it's a little bit more than that.
Absolutely. So Uchenna Nwosu, which, you know, a lot of people don't know about, but I like him. And then they've got a rookie linebacker. Drew Tranquil, number 49, from Notre Dame. That is starting to show up a little bit for him too, and so this is about the time of the season, you know, when you get past the first quarter of it, where you've got some rookies that you think have a chance, and they've worked with you all through training camp, and they've worked all through the first, you know, and you can see them start come along, they start to pick it up, they start to get it, and so those are kind of two names that you'll see out here at Nissan Stadium on Sunday, and don't be surprised if they make some things happen.
Can the Titans take advantage of the Chargers linebackers in coverage?
Well, I think they can. But to take advantage of linebackers, Jonathan, I mean, that's where I cut my teeth in this league, trying to prevent people from doing it. But to take advantage of linebackers in this league, an offense needs to put a defense into conflict situations. Because a linebacker's coverage can be accentuated so much if you know they're going to throw. Now, I know that sounds simple. But either by really good bird rabbit keys, which are, you know, keys that you pick up, tips that you pick up on alignments, you know, on splits, you know, whether it's run or pass, all those things that you study real hard. But by down and distance, all right, if they know you have to throw, well, then it makes a linebacker's job in coverage so much easier, whether you're playing man-to-man or whether you are playing zone. When you put linebackers in conflict situations where the most ideal is to make linebackers have to play the runner pass 50-50, then the advantage goes to the offense. It goes to the offense because unless you're blitzing, you're reactive on defense. You're reactive to what's going on. And so if you're in a 50-50 conflict as to where you're not pressuring, you're not blitzing, and so you've got to play the run and the pass off of run keys, and you've got to play them both equally, then the advantage goes to the offense. And so to be able to do that, your offense has to put people in those things. And to do that, you've got to play the chain game. And I know people get, you know, I mean, it sounds very simple, but it's a basic tenet of football. And it's a basic tenet on both sides of the coin, offensive and defensive football. If you're ahead of the chains on offense, all right, you're putting the defense into a conflict. Defensively, if you've got them behind the chains, if they're first and 20, and then they're second and 17, or they're second and 10 plus, and they're third and, you know, they're third and 9 plus. That advantage swings just percentage wise, not visually, just percentage wise, huge to the team that's ahead of the chains.
We were together on the General Jackson for the NFL draft, and when the Titans selected Jeffrey Simmons, I thought it was a great pick. I was talking about it for weeks leading up to the draft, how I would consider drafting him, even though I was describing how he would not be available for this rookie season because he's rehabbing the ACL injury. Fast forward to this week, I don't know, Monday. I am actually a week and a half ago when Paul said he was going to return after week 6. I am so surprised that he's available right now and he's on the practice field and they've started the clock with him, knowing how quickly he's been able to rehab and get back to game shape. Game shape, I know, is in quotation marks there. He needs some time. My point is, I mentally had put 2020 on the calendar for me with Jeffrey Simmons. It doesn't seem that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, it amazes me. I mean, it really does. And I was on board with you when I first started doing the draft and taking a deep dive into it, you know, when Rhett and I were. I mean, if you do it for a while, you know, which I've done, and you start looking, you go, okay, there's certain guys that just, you go, that's a dude, you know, and that's a dude in every aspect of it that you know is going to be a difference maker. and what he does is different. And so clearly also his, you know, his healing process and recuperative ability is different too. And so, I mean, I've watched him since he got in here. I love the pick. I absolutely love the pick because that you just don't have that many people on earth that can do that at that size for this type of game. I mean, when you have them, I've been fortunate enough to be around quite a few of them in this league. You know, I mean, going clear back to the Arizona days with Eric Swan. I mean, that was another. I mean, Albert Haynesworth. Those guys are different, and they really are. Aaron Donald. Okay, you know, I mean, those guys are different, and so. When they picked him, I was really happy. And I'm like you, but I had it kind of penciled in maybe in December. You know,
but even so, like it takes a while for have an impact. So I immediately thought, well, if he's available for the final month of the season, then really it's 2020 when we'll see the impact.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. But to me, and again, all credit goes to him.
Yeah.
To how hard he's worked, to Todd Torcelli and his group up there, the you know, his group in the training room, the medical staff, and I do know this. I mean, as well as that thing is run up there, they're not going to put him out there unless he's ready. But to see him actually out there on a practice field and to start the clock on him, I mean, it's amazing. And I'll say this. When he's out there, they're not going to sneak him out there. You're going to be able to tell when he's on the field.
There's a reason why they call him Big Jeff. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And I was telling you when I drafted Leonard Davis at the University of Texas, if anybody remembers Leonard Davis, a massive human being. And nobody ever in the whole time I was with him and the whole time he was in the league, nobody ever called him Leonard. You just called him Big because that's what he was. He was just Big. And this is Big Jeff. And I'm excited for him because I know that he's excited. Yeah. And when he gets in there, it's going to take him a while to work up through it. But he's made a remarkable, remarkable move.
He made the trip last week to Denver.
That's very smart. Okay.
Explain why, from a coaching perspective, why you bring him.
It's important because, first of all, he's been rehabbing. It's a lonely world, rehabbing. Rehabbing in the National Football League when the season's going on is really a lonely, arduous world. And he's never been around what it takes to get ready for a game, meetings, travel, mindset, all of that stuff. It's really smart what they did doing that because, you know, get him integrated into it, you know, step by step by step, so that when he is ready to play, then all of a sudden when we get on the plane to go somewhere, it's not new to him what you do, he's been preparing with them in the meeting rooms here. He's gotten comfortable here, but there's a lot they have to learn when they come in, and that the preparation process is part of it.
Tonight, 6 p.m. at Disc Insider, Mac Talk with Coach Mac, Rhett Bryan, Kirby Allen Kirby.
It's awesome. It really is. It's a great thing. I mean, first of all, Disc Insider is a wonderful place. We're getting great response out of it, and it's, have a lot of people come down. The people there are really good, and Rhett does a great job of driving the ship on that show. And so we get a lot of calls. We have a lot of fun. So call in and come on down.
Reed, you missed out. Mac and I had the first ever Blitz dinner, Hutton and Mac Blitz dinner, on the road this past weekend in Denver.
Tell me there was meat.
Yeah, there. Hey, there. Look,
anything you wanted.
This place, Davis Reed, you would have loved so much. I mean, this was your kind of place. And the thing that was really cool about it is, Hutt and I are so fortunate. We get invited out to dinner at a lot of cool places. And so I thought, you know, once I went to the team mass, I thought we were going to have to get in a car and drive, you know, a lot of places. Hutt texted me as I was coming down the escalator and said, just meet me out front. It's a 2-minute walk. It was perfect. David Reed, you'd love this place.
I would have enjoyed the walk there. The walk back, though.
The walk back was a little chilly. But you know what? It was worth it.
No, it was.
Next time we go to Denver, you can come and join us for dinner.
I don't know how I can do in the walk back with a belly full of meat and high altitude.
Belly full of meat and high altitude. Oh, we give a shout out to our host Toby.
Yeah,
that was outstanding.
Fantastic time, and there will be another Hutton and Mac Blitz dinner coming up soon, no doubt.
No doubt,
Mac. Thank you as always, and we will hear from you tonight, and then of course. Game day with Titans Radio, 3:05 kickoff, Titans and Chargers.
Always a pleasure, Hutt. See you, man.
Coach Mac, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, midday 180, served up by Wendy's, home of the $5 biggie bag.